is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Now, the opening drive.
What do we know after preseason game number one? Not all that much for certain, but that's never stopped people from making opinions before. And in fact, I think that's what we're going to start today. Call it an overstatement. Maybe it's an overreaction. But hang your hind parts out on the line and make a proclamation about what you think you know after preseason game number one. You can do these by texting in 710-710. I'll start. I think I know that Marquise Blair is going to be one of the starting safeties for Seattle in week one. I think I know that. I loved how he played in the game, and it's not more than just the big hit he had, though I think there are reasons to be optimistic about that. We can get into those. But I thought he had a great game. He played the most snaps of any defensive back. I thought he looked like he was a very sure tackler. I'm not sure if he's the best guy to pair with Bradley McDougal because Marquise Blair might be more of a strong safety than a free safety. But I think Seattle's found a starting safety in Marquise Blair, and I think that'll be sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and I think he's going to be the free safety. And here's the thing about safety now. There's been some discussion about Tedrick Thompson. You know, why isn't he making plays? It's hard to make plays at safety. Really, if you're free safety, your job, you're almost like an offensive lineman. You only get noticed if you get beat and if they're running down the middle of the field. Who's the kid that filled in for Earl and in Green Bay instantly got burned? And there was a bunch of, yeah, I just,
it's Stephen Terrell.
Terrell, thank you.
Terrell,
got
you
it.
I pulled it out.
Down the right sideline.
I did not think I had line. It. I was blanking, and
yeah.
There it was.
So, I mean, that's usually how you get noticed. You know, that you get beat. And then, you know, like to be a really good free safety, Earl Thomas was making plays all over the field. That's what Marquise Blair did. And he hasn't had a lot of practice. So I agree with you. I believe not only he's going to be the free safety. Because I know this, that Bradley McDougal would rather play up in the box. And I think they'd rather use him there. He's built more like a linebacker. But Marquise Blair, he did pretty much everything. Open field tackles. I mean, the hit that he had and the savvy to try to get his head out of the way. And then there was another play where he came up on the line and shot through a gap and made a tackle. Earl used to do that kind of stuff. So I'm really surprised by a couple of players. And one of them is Marquise Blair just because he didn't get very much practice. And the other one is Paxton Lynch. I mean, we'll see. He threw a couple of really nice passes, one of them to Jez Ferguson today for a touchdown. But he's going to make that – he's going to give Geno Smith a run for his money, I think. I mean, we have to see what happens this week. But I wonder if something clicked for him because I think he started off with a throw in the dirt.
It looked bad.
Yeah.
And then he was kind of running backward. It looked like one of those terrible throws where you're like, oh man, he's tentative. And
it looked exactly like what we've seen in practice from him. I mean, and all of a sudden he turned it around. So, and he's a nice kid. And I think Brock put it really well this morning. He said, it's like teaching, you know, somebody throwing Spanish 4 at somebody who hasn't taken Spanish 1. You know, like all of the language, everything. He didn't, coming out of college, he just didn't really get that part of it. I think it was simple for him and their system. And so now all of a sudden I think it's clicking for him. So we'll see. I mean, he followed it up with a good practice today. So I thought that was interesting. You know, two things I'll start with. I think my dad used to call it a wild something guess. We can't say that anymore. So it's a wag. But I would say this, Jacob Martin, he's going to be the leading sacker on the team. He will lead the team in sacks.
Why do you say that, Dave?
Coming off the edge, the way he plays with a certain sort of mayhem. Like you see him, when he comes off the edge, he plays football like it's an emergency. It's an emergency. It's a life and death situation. And the way just his quick twitch coming off the edge, his relentlessness. You know, every once in a while you see a guy who looks like he's pretty near a tackle, but he just keeps running instead of like diving at the guy. Jacob Martin is the guy that will dive at somebody's legs. He knows that he treats the football field like every little inch is critical. You know, the way he turns the corner, the way he leans in, and the way that he is just, like I said, relentless. His arms and legs are always going, uses his hands great. That's what I saw out of him. So I'll make that my first wild prediction.
Well, what happened with Rashim Green? I thought he was your guy.
Well, I like Rashim Green.
No, but that he was going to be coming on this year. That he might be better than Martin.
Yeah. Well, I've seen this is based on our watching the game.
Oh, the first game. So what? Did Green look terrible?
The question. No, he didn't look terrible at all. He looked great. Okay. He had some.
Why
good
are you
plays.
Laughing, Danny?
Well,
it seems
funny.
Like there's some tension here. And no. Usually you don't laugh when there's tension.
What are you talking about?
I don't know.
I think everything's fine. We're having back and forth.
Let me go back. I didn't want to interrupt either one of you, but Marquise Blair. Let's start there. So what makes you think that he's going to replace, like, Tedrick Thompson? Because Pete Carroll yesterday, he had some positive comments about Tedrick Thompson, and it seems like Thompson and McDougald have been the starting safeties all through training camp, but you think in the next three games that Marquise Blair will do enough to replace Tedrick Thompson as a starter?
That would be correct. Yes, I think he will do enough. I think that Marquise Blair got a little bit of a slow start. He had, what was it, a hip injury in the offseason? And he was a little bit limited in some of his different approaches, some of the practice time that he was able to take. And he got out there, and I wondered if he was going to play at all on Thursday. The fact that he played as much as he did and he played as well as he did made me think that they are giving him every opportunity to play his way up the depth chart. And I thought that's exactly what he did. I thought he was a really sure tackler.
Look at this. He went to Wooster High School.
Who went to Wooster High School?
Marquise Blair.
No way.
In Wooster, Ohio.
Oh, Ohio.
Oh, he
Well, they
looked
were not
fantastic.
The 1981 Nevada State champs, I'll tell you that.
Probably not.
Different Wooster
not
entirely.
You know what? Here's another one for you. Another crazy observation from the game. Colitro, I think, is going to make it hard for them to cut him. Mm-hmm. He played really well. I thought he played as well. I think he had the best game. Of, you know, maybe Paxton Lynch a little bit behind him. But, yeah, I thought Colitro was all over the place. That's going to make it really difficult because, you know, you had Ben Burkervin, you got Cody Barton. So that's another observation from – and hopefully he's able to keep going. But that guy is interested in being a pro. You know, I remember when he came in when KJ was being interviewed and, you know, he just wants to learn. He wants to be part of it. He wants to try to become a pro. So – good for him. I mean, it's too bad for linebackers that have good games because, man, there's
it's a stocked position, man.
Yeah, what are they going to do there, Dave? I mean, it's so much is going to depend here on the preseason. Everybody knows that. But I was looking at Bob Condotta, Seattle Times, his 53-man breakdown last week after the Denver game, and he had Ben Burkervin as the odd guy out. Mm-hmm. And Shaquem Griffin, we expect that he's on the bubble. But how are they going to sort all that out? I know special teams will be a factor, too.
Yeah. So did he have Shaquem making the team?
He had Shaquem making the team.
See, I would think that if you cut Ben Burkervin, somebody's going to pick him up. I don't think you may be able to slide Shaquem onto the practice squad because I don't know that that people are going to take a shot at him, that they're going to give him a shot because – you know, just because of his hand, and a lot of teams have decided that's just a guy that they're not going to draft. And you know, I'm not so sure. But you know, he made it difficult too because his coverage the other day, he was flying down the field,
especially the first kickoff.
He had the hit on the opening kickoff. Their special teams were significantly better.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah. I know people were complaining about the kicker because he missed his first one.
Yeah, but wasn't it?
Yeah, but it was
56.
Still, 56 yard field.
It's a long ways.
Yeah, and he had enough leg on it. But somebody was proclaiming the milk was already sour. I was like, no. That's not even reason to give it a sniff check yet.
Blair Walsh is back, or he's inching his way back.
No.
You see that in New York?
Oh, really?
Yeah,
he's making
Catanzaro quit after missing a couple of extra points. And
no way, the
Blair Walsh is out there for a tryout.
He quit?
Yeah, I read a story today, Yahoo Sports, that Catanzaro.
Catanzaro?
He quit and he walked away from $2.3 million. Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
So the Jets are looking for a kicker.
Is
it because of this helmet?
No, I'm just making it up.
I didn't like the helmet.
No, I'm not making it up.
That's wild.
When I signed on to Yahoo today, I read the story. Yeah. I didn't read the story
because
I was waiting to talk to the professor about it.
The kicker quit?
Kicker quit. Yeah.
That's the softest thing I've ever heard of.
But Blair Walsh,
that's the softest.
You just couldn't take it anymore. The difficult practices.
That's the softest thing I've ever heard.
Okay, but your curdled milk is back. The expiration date is long overdue, but Blair Walsh is back. Or I don't think the Jets have signed him yet, but he had a good – at least he tweeted out that he made 10 for 10 during his tryout. And so maybe we'll see Blair Walsh back again. I want to see Blair Walsh back in the league. I think it'd be kind of fun.
Once you get someone who has been spoiled milk elsewhere, he resets. You don't know if he's spoiled or not. He might be good.
He resets?
Yes, that's correct. Now, the first time he misses in a clutch situation, that's when you give it the first sniff. But once you pick him up off the street, like he's got a chance to be good. He's not necessarily spoiled at that point.
Well, that's the way kickers are these days.
Exactly.
Right?
Steven Hauschka, he looked like he might have been spoiled milk when he was here. He went to Buffalo. He's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, that's true. But, yeah.
I can't believe a kicker quit. $2.3 million. I mean, I guess, all the power to him if that's not going to make him happy. But, man.
Is he quitting football for good?
I think he just can't take the mental stress of missing kicks.
Could be.
$2.3 million has a tendency to ease those tensions.
Yeah, there's not a lot of things that I would decide I don't want to put up with in exchange for $2.3 million. Yeah. And the stress of maybe missing a kick would not be one of the things that I would say, I'm going to opt out of the possibility of making $2.3 million. Just, I don't need the hassle.
Especially in preseason. Especially in preseason.
Yeah. Yeah, it's seriously a preseason game. Totally meaningless.
See, what's the worst thing that's going to happen to you? You're going to keep missing? Okay. Well, I'll cross that bridge when I come to it. It is Danny Davenport. What's your big, bold prediction?
Well, I'm not done yet. I want to ask Dave about Paxton Lynch,
okay,
too, because I'm on the Paxton Lynch bandwagon, too. I thought he looked great. And you know, training camp, everybody talking about, boy, the guy's terrible. I can see why Denver got rid of him. Doesn't live up to being a first-round pick. And what were the Broncos thinking? All those things. And then if you didn't know any of that and you saw Paxton Lynch in the second half the other night, you were going, man, that guy's a pretty good quarterback. He looks better than Geno Smith. But then you got to take into account, was he going against deep backups, third stringers? Is that one of the reasons that he looked as good as he did? Same with Jazz Ferguson, and think back to Kaysom Williams and how he didn't make the team, and so we're making a big deal out of Jazz Ferguson, maybe prematurely, but we'll see. But we're going to talk to Jazz Ferguson today at 5 o'clock. But, yeah, Paxton Lynch, I just want to see him come in the first half, and I think he's going to have an opportunity to do that against Minnesota. Geno Smith with the cyst, getting that cyst removed, he's probably not going to be playing in this game, I wouldn't think. And so I just want to see Lynch play against maybe some first-stringers and second-stringers and see if he can do the same thing he did the other night.
Well, I guess what it seems to me, I mean, yes, he has to repeat that in the game, but he also has to do it at practice, man. I mean, that's the thing. Coaches, that really matters to them, that it sticks in their minds. And so it's on the forefront of their mind. Does he practice well? Because you want to know what you can count on in the game.
He looked better today at practice.
He did. So I thought, okay, that's step one. And then step two is continue to do that each and every day. And then we'll see next Sunday against Minnesota. But, you know, there's always the chance. The things that he did well didn't come about because of the competition. It didn't come about because he was going against a second or third stringer. It was about him, about his decisiveness, about looking like he's in control, about being more accurate and just being more confident. And I think that could have happened against the first string or the third string. So he was just a player that we have not seen. And the way those two looked, it was exact opposite, right? Geno Smith. Now, Geno, a lot of things broke down for him. You know, he got pressured quite a bit, and there was a lot of stuff. I noticed that people are, even the Seahawks, they're sending blitzes in the preseason.
I know. What's up with that?
Yeah,
I love that.
It used to not be that way. You know why? Because you can't really evaluate a player when you scheme something. Like, oh, we're going to overload this side, and this guy's going to run through scot-free and get a sack. So usually you don't want to see that. You want to see a guy work for it. You want to see him put a move on a guy. And there has been some blitzes. So, there was a couple jailbreaks for Geno Smith, and it was a little bit tougher for him. So I thought it was a tougher situation. But I feel like the way Paxton Lynch played, that he would have handled that, you know, whether it was the first string or the third string. So that's the important part, I think, is something clicked in his mind so that he gets it now. So guy's a first-round talent, and he's come kind of a difficult road. You know what the other thing, too? He's a nice chap. You listen to him? I mean, he is a good dude.
I heard a little bit of that.
Yeah,
this morning.
I just think he is – I think he's a guy that maybe I was a little bit negative on him just because I heard the thing about, you know, the video games.
Yes.
But, you know, he was overwhelmed. He didn't really know what to do, and I feel like now he's starting to get there.
He looked great today. He had five really good throws, according to Brock Huard. I saw two of them, but Brock said five. I'll go with the quarterbacks on that one right there in the little club. They evaluate themselves.
Mm-hmm. Usually a guy like that, too, that's that tall, is never that mobile. I guess Cam Newton, when you think about him. But I don't know. Paxton Lynch just surprised me with his mobility. I thought he looked pretty good out there.
All right. So I've said that Marquise Blair is going to be a starter at safety. Dave's talking about Austin Kolletro being real tough for him to not be on this team, given how he played, and that Jacob Martin will lead the team in sacks. How about you?
Well, here's what I came up with. Drawing conclusions from week one of the preseason against the Denver Broncos. You ready?
Yes.
You had a drum roll at all, Matt?
No.
Nobody has a drum roll.
No, it's the preseason.
CJ Process won't make this team.
Oh, come on.
What? What, you don't like that one? What's wrong with that one?
Well,
that was my observation.
I don't think
is that one that everyone in the world has.
Yes.
An observation there's that not everyone one, in the world has.
There's not one well, person think, in Seattle who thinks think he's going to make the team. Not one.
There's not one person.
Not one person thinks CJ Process will make this team.
CJ does.
Not one.
Not
come
one.
Come on. There are people in Seattle who think that CJ Process might make the team.
No one.
Starting with Pete Carroll.
If anyone is out there that thinks CJ Process is going to make the team, please text in.
All right. So you're ripping me for my proclamation here.
Well, you're right.
Because, what, Marquise Blair was a better proclamation?
Well, at least there was some risk involved. Okay. There are some people who think he won't start.
That would be weird if somebody rips another guy's prediction when you just did it to me. By the way, the 253 here says, if his name was Harry Ferguson, no one would be talking about him. But with a name like Jazz, we have to talk about him.
Yeah, that's true. Hilarious. That's true. Okay, so you don't like that one. You know, the thing, and Dave already talked about it, so I didn't want to bring that up, so I thought I'd come up with something different. And CJ Process wasn't all that different. But I love the fact that they blitzed so much the other night. And I was really surprised because it was preseason. You typically don't see that in the preseason. You just save that, put it in your back pocket, and if you're going to use it, we know that Pete Carroll doesn't like to blitz. K.J. Wright talked about it being something that they're probably going to have to do this year more of. And when you're trying to sort through who the pass rushers are going to be, I love that they're going to be bringing more people. And I know that you can look at it and go, hey, they're going to have some young guys on the back end. You're going to put them out there in harm's way. But I still think that, come on, let's just get some pressure on the quarterback any way that you need to do it. And it just it introduces some doubt into the quarterback's mind, whether you're Drew Brees or whoever you are. If the Seahawks could at least have that element to their game, are you listening or are you just like looking at the text talk?
I'm looking at
the text. I'm saying some really important stuff here.
That's possible.
It's insightful.
There's some good texts that have come in, though, where saying CJ will make the team, signed CJ's mom. That came from the 253. I think there's an imposter there. I don't think that's really CJ Process's mom.
Okay, you can look at it this way because, you know, the smoking log of the week. I haven't done really well with that, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm typically, in fact, you guys think it's funny that I'm wrong.
Yes.
So often. So if I'm saying that CJ Process won't make the team, that just increased his chances that he will. Correct?
I would say this. That's sound logic, Tim. I now think you may have taken a risk by saying that.
I don't think it's sound logic. I think it's sound Jim Moore logic.
Like, Process might have a huge game, you know, all of a sudden. What's his latest injury anyway?
I have no idea, but he wasn't practicing today.
Okay, here's the. Remember last week we played that? Brock and Salk had the montage of all the different injuries that he had. You can either sit here and think that that's funny, or you can think that it's cold and cruel. And I was torn on that one because I thought it was kind of cool. Do you think CJ Process can help what's happened to him?
Yes.
You do?
Yeah, man. He's missed the start of training camp in two of his 4 years here because he was sick. How many times have you missed the start of a training camp because you were sick, Dave?
Zero. How many times have I missed a practice or a game because of being sick?
How many times have you missed
Zero.
You want one more that you're going to mock? I got another one. Yapati's going to have injury issues all year long, and I'm concerned about him. I love guys from Idaho because they played at the Kibbe Dome, and I used to hit golf balls off the Kibbe Dome from the Moscow golf course, and I just have a thing about the Kibbe Dome that I love.
Oh, you would hit golf balls? I thought you would climb up to the top of the Kibbe Dome.
That's what I thought, too. How'd you get up there?
No,
get on top of the building.
Can we do that now? Because that'd be a blast. Well,
there's a tee box that's just across the road. And you can just kind of go sideways and smack some balls off the Kibbe Dome there. But that has nothing to do with Mike Yapati other than he played there a long time ago. But this guy, he missed 15 games in 2017. He missed 6 games last year. And we all know about the talent, but he's breaking down now that he's in his 30s, and I think that's going to be an issue all season long. You like that one at all?
I do.
Okay.
Right. It's Danny David Moore. This hour is brought to you by Parsons Extreme Golf. It's time for us to take two.
Take two.
The Mariners were swept by the Rays over the weekend, but they have promoted top prospect Jared Kelnick to Double-A Arkansas.
First pitch.
He's getting closer.
First pitch. He took a first pitch into center field. Got a single. Double A, very first pitch, very first at bat.
He's on a rocket ship.
Yeah, let's get him up here.
Looks like Julio Rodriguez, who was sidelined earlier in the season with, I think it was a wrist injury. He's hit. He's still in high A. So
he had a four-hit game yesterday.
Yeah, he's really turned it on. And you've got Kelenic, who's now in double A, which is absolutely fantastic.
Let me ask you guys, could you pick him out of a profile?
Kelenic? I've seen him enough. I'll show you a video. There's one of him just breaking a bat over his knee, and it's pretty impressive.
Really?
Like, he just snaps it over his knee, and you're like, Jared Kelenic needed a toothpick, so he broke his bat.
Hey, C-Rod, do you think Kelenic has a chance to break camp next year at the age of 20?
With the Major League squad?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I think the Mariners are going to at least keep him down in the AA, maybe even AAA level next year.
We'll see him next year, though. We'll see him probably toward the end of the year.
That seems like a fair bet. Yeah, I would wager the end of 2020, definitely by 2021, we'll see Kelenic.
Why not right now? Get him up here.
We don't want to rush him.
We don't want to spoil him, Dave. We don't want to ruin
him. It's going to hurt his psyche so much.
Yes.
Yeah.
Maybe.
No,
I don't know.
I understand that baseball people are saying that that's the stupidest thing they've ever heard.
No, I'm with you, though, Dave.
There's young guys that have come up before. You've had young guys. A-Rod was, what, at 20? Did he almost win the MVP?
He was 20 in 96 when he won MVP. He debuted at 18 in 94. Juan Soto last year, the Nationals, was 19.
It happens.
Yeah.
Paul DeCunha or whatever. Atlanta.
He's 20.
Yeah. Well, I mean, everybody's different, right? I mean, they've evaluated it this way. So we're just all fired up about it because we heard Scott Service talk about how it was like the greatest workout he'd ever seen.
An arbitrator ruled this afternoon against Antonio Brown's grievance to wear his old helmet.
And I'll tell you what, I'm with him on this.
Are you really?
My helmet was really important to me. And, you know, if somebody told me I have to wear another helmet, I would do it if I didn't have a choice. It's not like I'm going to get cut over it or not be able to play. But, I mean, your helmet's really important to you. You know, Brock was talking about vision and everything, but, man, my helmet was like it had to be just right, and I wanted it. It's your brain. You're protecting your brain.
But that's the whole point, is that they're saying this does not meet our current safety thresholds.
Yeah, I don't. No, I've heard that, and I remember Lofa went through that. I mean, he had, and I want to say he might have switched back or something like that, but. Yeah, the helmet was really important to me. And that's why I'm always like Shaquille and Shaquem with all the hair. Like, I had to have it, like, super tight on my head. And then, like, the next day after on game day, it would be so pumped up. Like, the next day, I would just barely be able to get it on, and it would hurt. Because on game day, you're all fired up, and you want it, you know, just like it's... Like, my helmet never came off. If my helmet ever came off in a game, my head was going to be in it. That's how it was. Just very important piece of furniture for me. I had to have a certain kind of helmet, and so I'm kind of with him on this a little bit.
Wow, that surprised me, Dave. Do you think
that his head would have been inside the helmet if it came off? Definitely surprised me.
Maybe they could have a grandfather clause or something like that.
They said no more grandfather clause. They've had it before.
They're not going to do that.
Yeah,
said he can't use it. Should he have to change?
No, I don't think he should have to. And you know what? If it's a legal thing, go say bring me a waiver. Bring me a waiver. I'll sign it.
What if somebody wants to wear a leather helmet? And that's what's good for their head.
Well, he'd pay the price for that. Go ahead. Let him do it. Just sign the waiver. You're not going to come back and sue us.
Oh, it is Danny Dave and Moore. I just imagine, too, the announcement in the press box. Dave Wyman suffered decapitation. His return to the game, questionable. Ryan Davis joins us next.
Is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
This hour, Danny, Dave, and Moore brought to you by Parsons Extreme Golf. We've got Ryan Divish with us here on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. Ryan, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing pretty well. I would think that the one, and with Mike Zunino in town this weekend with the Tampa Rays, I would think that the one thing most Mariner fans, even if they aren't fully on board with the idea of rebuilding, if you take a look at the players that they traded away in the offseason, it certainly looks like they made the right decision in thinking that we're better off trying to reset a little bit than we are moving forward. Because the guys that they traded, Zanino, Cano, Diaz, even Paxton to a certain extent, none of those guys have gone out and had blockbuster seasons.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's like they probably traded them when their value was at the highest point that it was ever going to be. Because if you think about it, like with Zanino and Paxton, they had club control this year and next year. So, like, if you waited a year and then you tried to trade him, you'd only get, you know, you're trading somebody that's basically a free agent after 1 year, so it's a one-year rental. So your value of return on prospects is going to be lowered anyways. So you're right. You know, Zanino hasn't hit. It's kind of the same thing we've seen all season, or we've seen in past seasons from him. He's been hurt a little bit, and he just basically lost playing time. Paxton cannot give up runs in the first inning. He's just been so bad in the first inning, and I don't know what the deal is there. And Diaz can't throw a slider for a strike, and Cano has been Cano. So, yeah, there hasn't been that, you know, they always get better mantra for Mariners players that you seem to think about when they leave. At least for these ones, they have not all gotten better. They've actually kind of all went down. But I think that's partially because the Mariners traded for them at a high point for them when their value is the highest.
Hey, Ryan, our boy Daniel Vogelbach continues to rise in the cult hero status. He got tossed the other night. Had you seen anything like that from him? I didn't know he was that fiery of a dude.
You know, I mean, yeah, I've seen that before, you know, and I don't know that he was super angry. I mean, he was obviously upset, but, you know, those guys know what to say to really get tossed. And a lot of times what they'll say is, you know, the ump will let them have their say for a little bit. And then as they're walking back, but they don't want to hear it once they hit the dugout. You know, it's like, you can have your say, you can disagree with the call. You can even make a little bit of a show, but once you get back in the dugout, it's time to move on. And Bogey just kind of kept it going and going and wanted to let the guy know, and the guy tossed him. And, you know, realistically, it seems to me that looking at the pitch tracker, Daniel Vogelbach has a better idea of the strike zone than that umpire does.
Well, and I could hear him screaming, "I told him not to say that." I wonder what it was.
Yeah,
I mean, I can hear it on the broadcast.
There's some magic words you can use if you really want to get tossed out of a game. And Vogelbach knows it. And, you know, he let it go. Some of the other guys, either they have this room behind the dugout where they kind of go to vent and break things and throw things and throw their helmets. You know, I have all these people, "Oh, Kyle Seager doesn't care because he doesn't get angry on the field." I'm like, you know, if you went back and saw the bat marks on the wall and heard some of the stories that we aren't allowed to write about, per se, about, you know, bat racks being broken or Logan Morrison taking his bat and pummeling it against a metal post and the bat shards bouncing back and hitting him in the eye and knocking him out of the game. There was a broken window. There was a few other things. So, yeah, people always just assume that these guys don't care if they make an out because they don't see them getting upset on the field. But there's a room back there that looks like the Wolverine hit it, and it's kind of got some great stories. I'd love to do a story on that, but those guys won't tell us.
That's hilarious, man. I had no idea that so it's like a panic room or
anger room.
Yeah, anger room.
Yeah, it's an anger room. They used to have a punching bag back there too, but somebody broke that or knocked it off there. And I guess, like, I can, since he's not here, but one time I was standing in the clubhouse and the trainer the clubhouse manager handed Zanino a new helmet. Zanino looked at me and go, "What do you need a new helmet for?" He goes, "The ear fell off of it." I'm like, "Really?" Yeah. And the clubhouse manager's like, "Sure, you ripped it off, psycho."
Hey, Ryan, is Vogelbach done enough for you to think that he'll be a full-time designated hitter in the future?
I think he's done enough on defense to think that he's a full-time designated hitter. But I will say this, he's been better than expected at first base. So you could play him out there 2 or 3 days a week and not be hurt by that. He's still got some problems with lefties, and I think we're seeing some fatigue. And I think that part of that fatigue that we're seeing is because he's being forced to play first base so much, you know, with Domingo Santana being hurt and not being able to throw. You're playing Vogelbach out there, and I think we've seen some of his numbers a little bit kind of dwindle because of having to play out in the field so much. And also, I think lefties, you know, teams are just going to give him a steady diet of lefties, especially late in the game, until he proves that he can be a little bit more consistent. You know, he's hit a couple home runs off of him, but it's just not the same as he does when he faces right-handers. And that's the next step for him. I mean, if he really wants to be in the framework of Nelson Cruz or Victor Martinez or all these guys that were full-time DHs, then he has to prove that he can't be limited by right or left-handed pitchers.
Felix has been out since early May, but he had a rehab start for Everett and then another one in Modesto. When do you think we'll see the King back on the mound?
Yeah, so he's got another rehab start this week in Everett, and then I don't know which day. And then they want him to pitch one more start with Tacoma. I mean, he thinks he's ready to come back now, but maybe they would only just use this one Everett start and insert him, but I don't think so. I don't think maybe the Mariners are in that big of a hurry. They want to make sure, look, if we're going to run this guy out here, you can't just go 3.5-4 innings and call it good. They want him to be at least built up so he can go 85 to 90 pitches. So I think he'll make two more rehab starts. We'll see him by the end of the month. And then however many starts he makes till the end of the season. I'm very curious to see how that goes. Curious to see the fan reaction. I've written so many words about this guy over the last, well, since I started covering in 2006, but really over the last 4 years of just kind of watching him deal with age, his baseball mortality, and how he hasn't been able to handle it properly. And I think some of that frustration of fans is like they don't feel like he's put in the effort to do so. I think he wants to. I don't think he knows how. But, yeah, it's pretty crazy. I think he'll make at least three or four starts before the end of the season.
Talking to Ryan Divish from the Seattle Times. Ryan, we're going to start to see some of the younger guys called up. I know Jacob Fraley had an injury that probably derailed his promotion. We should see at some point. Are there any other guys we should be keeping an eye on for when they might be called up to the big leagues?
Yeah, you know, Fraley could be, you know, if he plays 5 or 6 games at Tacoma, they could bring him up by the next homestand, which I think is probably what they'll do. He was supposed to be up on this homestand, but he hurt the quad. Rashad Long would be up here right now, but he broke his finger turning a double play on his free hand, which some of the players thought was amusing that he went to catch the ball and it hit his free hand and broke his finger. So he isn't up yet, but I assume if he gets healthy, he'll be there. Kyle Lewis, Justin Dunn are both guys that have to be put on the 40-man this offseason to protect them from the Rule 5 draft. So they're gonna put them on now and then bring them up in September. They're going to wait until after that the AA Arkansas team plays their postseason game and then bring them up. You know, so those are guys that will be here. The big question would be whether or not they bring up Evan White, the first baseman. He doesn't have to go on the 40-man this offseason. He's got one more year. So they're running the debate on whether they want to start his service time clock, start his option clock earlier than they actually have to. But at the same time, with Ryan Healy's injury, and it's possible that he's probably not back with the organization next year, then maybe Evan White is a guy that's going to be up by May of next year, so it's not that big of a deal. But, yeah, that's one I think they're kind of debating is he'll be up. And then there'll be a bunch of relievers and just pitchers, you know. I mean, hell, I don't even know half the guys on the team anymore. You just walk by. It's like if they're a 6'3" white dude with a beard, they're probably a reliever. We just don't know what their names are. You know, that's kind of what we look at anymore.
All right, Divish, we always appreciate it, man. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, take it easy, guys.
All right, that is Ryan Divish of the Seattle Times. We've got a couple of Mariners tickets to give away. It's the series where we have to defend home field. We'll explain why and how next.
You're listening to Danny, Dave, and Moore.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
All right, we got two tickets to give away. It's going to be your chance. You get two tickets to the August 23rd Mariners game. They're hosting Toronto. We need to show up in mass to prevent the hosers from overrunning our fine ballpark.
Not on our table.
That's right. It's a Marco Gonzalez series.
Ah, you know what? You just ruined it, Dave.
You just gave away the answer again.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh. Well, we weren't informed of that. I'm going to stick up for Dave here.
No, it's true. He wasn't informed of it at all. The question was going to be which specific piece of furniture did Marco Gonzalez state was befouled upon Toronto's visit last year. And the correct answer was dining room table. So instead, what we're going to do is just take the third caller, 206.
Oh, man.
421.
Come on. Come on. You can come up with something else.
421-3776. We got two tickets to give away next hour. We'll try to come up with a different context.
How about which reporter got in trouble with somebody in a Canadian paper?
Oh, that's true. That one might be something we could do. Third caller, 206-421-3776.
Because it could be Jim.
Yeah, you get two tickets to the August 23rd game. We're going to be there that day. You can come by early. Stop by our live broadcast at Edgar's Cantina from 3 to 6 p.m. The tickets and our broadcast are brought to you by Greg's Japanese Auto. I'm interested about this, Dave. So Antonio Brown, he's been in the league 9 years. He's been wearing the same helmet. They've now decided that that helmet no longer meets the safety criteria for the league. He needs to change it, is what he's being told. He doesn't have the option, and there's other guys. There, I think it's a total of 31 players who have been wearing either this model helmet or something else that has been deemed insufficient. They've told they got to change. Brady's on that list. I believe Aaron Rodgers is on that list as well. My first reaction was similar to yours, which is, well, it's his head.
Yeah.
Like, it's his head, and if that's what he wants to... And it's weird to think that, oh, you're totally fine wearing it for the past 9 years, but you can't wear it going forward. And then I thought about it. It's like, if you're the NFL, you can't let players decide what equipment they want to wear, right? Like, you have to have some base guidelines, because then guys are going to come in. If you leave it up to them, they might have all sorts of different things that they would choose. Like, you have to have standard. Having standard equipment is not an unrealistically high burden.
Right. I would say this. Maybe attorneys can text in if I'm way off on this about the waiver thing. Because that's where I felt like... The whole concussion thing, too, that, you know, the NFL is doing all this stuff, what I think is for show. I think it's for show. They know it's a violent game, but they want to look like they are really trying to stay on top of it and keep it safe and make it, you know, everybody's afraid that the supply of football players is going to run low. And I just don't think that's just the supply side. The demand is still very high.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe 10-25% less people play football because of all of the reports about CTE and concussions and stuff. You still have a supply of football players. It's not going to run out.
But if you can make a helmet that's safer, like the idea of making the headgear safer,
yeah,
that's a no-lose proposition, right? Like, and not to say that you can make it safe.
At what cost?
Well, that's
and
the thing.
And the cost in this case is obviously his comfort.
Or his vision.
Or
I think that's what he's saying, that it juts out. But, like, there's a local company, Visus,
mm-hmm.
and they've changed the approach that they're taking. And Visus has one of the helmets that's now within the criteria that they've kind of changed the idea of how they make the helmet, like what layers they use. If you can have developments in safety... That's a good thing for everybody, right?
Yeah.
Not that it's going to make football safe. And if you're the league, you would want to steer your players toward what you believe are safer products.
Right. But, yeah, I guess, you know, it's that important to him, though, that – and I can only compare it to what – there was – in my day, there was Bike and Rydell. And I never wore a Rydell helmet. I just didn't like them. They had a bunch of little cushions in there. And then – and the Bike helmet had the – the bladder, so that you could blow it up and, you know, make it fit tighter on your head. And there wasn't any safety at stake, the difference between the two. But there was comfort. Brock mentioned vision, you know, and for a receiver, I mean, now all of a sudden you're seeing, I had to have a certain kind of face mask. I didn't like the ones that were, you know, I wanted to be able to see. So I had like the top part open because I just didn't want anything in the way. It had one bar down the middle. But, yeah, those kinds of things are like preferences. How much safer is it? I mean, they've been playing this way for, what, the last 8 years with these? Have they been reckless? Has that been causing concussions?
They think there are safer alternatives now.
Yeah.
They're trying to raise the bar.
It's never occurred to me, Dave, but when players get traded, do they take their helmets with them? I just assume that they went to the new team and got a new helmet.
Yeah, I think you go get a new helmet when you...
Antonio Brown brought his helmet
from
the Steelers and painted it so it looked like a Raiders helmet.
Oh, my God. That's what I used to do when I showed you the picture of me and my brother with the
You had homemade dolphins helmets,
right? Yeah, the
right?
dolphin jumping through the fire, ring of fire.
It's the sun, Dave. It's the sun.
He's jumping through a ring of fire.
He is not jumping through a ring
of fire. I'll never think anything other than that. But, yeah, it's...
Well, like when you went to Denver, did you take your helmet with you?
No. No. I just got a similar one there. But, you know, every year they wanted to come in and replace them all the time. And I was like, no, I have this helmet right where I want it. You know, I don't want to change my helmet all the time.
Can I have one more helmet question before we get to the professor?
Sure.
Was it bike that you never wore? You didn't like
no,
bike?
No, it was Rydell. Yeah, I love the bike helmets.
Was it because Rydell's, you didn't like the way it made your hair look because of the cushy pads?
I didn't care about my hair, Danny. That's probably not much of a shock. Yes, you would take your helmet off on the field and there'd be all these weird squares in your hair. I just couldn't have it.
We took 30 seconds away from the professor for that question.
That's correct. John Clayton's next.